This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, and this is the return from vacation edition. Some of you may be listening to this later, so you may be wondering what we're talking about. We usually record ahead. So we're both back from Labor Day weekend.
Yes, and summer recess.
And I see, how was yours?
It was good. Weather was nice, all of that. It's the cooler sleeping weather at night is really nice. I love fall.
Yeah. Yeah. I see you have a little Band-Aid on your finger.
Oh,
did you suffer a mishap?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was making cucumber salad. Mm-hmm. So I wanted very thin, evenly sliced cucumbers. Mm-hmm. So I decided to use our new mandolin.
Oh. You know, mandolins, they should be outlawed along with 24 capacity magazines.
Yes.
For automatic weapons.
I found it out the hard way.
Yeah.
So I'm slicing
along. Deadly.
Right. And I almost took off a good fleshy portion of my pinky.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Did you put it in a plastic bag and take it to the emergency room?
No. It didn't come off. It wasn't severed. Then I would have totally. But there was a lot of gushing blood, which, you know, freaked me out a little bit, made me dizzy. I had to lay down for a moment. But good thing Paul was there. Hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah.
Tape it up, all of that. But yeah, and this was 4 days ago.
Stitches?
No.
Not even?
Okay. No.
Yeah.
But it's healing nicely.
Yeah. Yeah.
From what I can tell.
Sort of a judgment call as to when to put in stitches.
Yeah.
So, I'll share with you my own holiday mishaps. I mean, it was like very relaxed weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, I'm standing, talking to some family members on my deck. And suddenly I realize that around my legs are swirling about 2 dozen angry wasps. You know, and apparently they'd built a nest right under the deck.
Ah.
That's like their favorite
in
place.
In a hole. Right.
And so I leaped back, but not too soon to be stung by one angry wasp on the shin.
Mm.
And so.
Ouch.
That kind of hurts. And so.
They leave a stinger?
No, there are no stingers. They don't leave stingers. They just sting. They
really
can sting repeatedly.
Oh, yeah,
unlike bees,
yeah.
they can re-sting.
They don't die after a sting.
So apparently what happens is if they send off a distress signal and the whole hive comes to their...
Oh, no.
To their
That's like the killer bees.
Yeah, it's sort of like...
So, the angry wasps.
So there I am, with like this, kind of red, swollen shin.
Oh,
and,
no.
So I tried to get through the weekend and, it was okay. I put a little... ice pack on it, and I kind of soldiered through it. And then on the final day, this final morning before we packed up and came back in, I went to swim, and it was just a beautiful day, almost no wind, the water was flat, the water was cool and clear, and I said, well, let me do, instead of like, one back and forth, let me go out, two times, for a nice mile or so swim. And feel really good, come back out, and I've done this like probably hundreds of times, this very self-same swim in front of my house. And I step, and all of a sudden I feel this sort of piercing pain in my foot. And I come out, my toe is all bleeding. And I must have stepped on the side of a shell or maybe a piece
or
of glass concealed
cut,
in the water.
Cut, yeah.
And so that's the same side as my bee sting. So it kind of distracts me, from my wasp sting.
Oh, no.
So it kind of distracts me from the wasp sting.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So, okay. It's like, okay, no broken bones, no, you know, concussions.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But, you know, we're both casualties of Labor Day. So anyway, before we get to questions, usually our format is questions, and it is today. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. We have a backlog of questions that we're going to get to in a minute. But I wanted to, I called to your attention an article.
Yeah.
And I was just, I didn't even, like, cue you. I said, yeah. What's wrong with this article?
Yes.
And it's ostensibly a reasonable proposition. It's headline, healthy foods more important than type of diet to reduce heart disease risk. Researchers compare three popular diets and find that all three reduced heart injury. So this would lead one to a sort of nutritional nihilism. It would just basically, it's kind of one of those I told you so articles. It's like, look, don't get bent out of shape, low carb, low fat. Just eat healthy and it'll help your heart.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the take home message from this.
Exactly.
Right? You know, it's like, don't get nuts and this is like wrapped up in these controversies. You know, you can eat a vegan diet. You can eat a
low carb diet, a high protein diet.
Yeah. You know, don't worry about it. So I sent it to you.
Yeah.
And
upon closer look.
Yes.
Here's the thing. They said they compared three popular diets. They did not. They started with a diet typical of a DASH type diet, which is greater than 50% of carbohydrates. And what they did with the other two diets.
Whole grain.
Yeah, whole grain,
diet,
a lot of produce, low fat,
low fat
dairy,
and vegetables.
Very lean meat, if any, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what
take the skin off your chicken,
of course,
right?
Yeah. God forbid you get a little collagen.
Low fat dairy, like
skim
milk is
skim
in the
milk,
DASH,
absolutely.
Right?
Low fat dairy, non fat dairy, non fat.
And that's a conventional diet for hypertension, the DASH diet.
Right,
for
the DASH type diet.
Yeah. And low sodium, by the way.
Yes, low sodium. And which the DASH diet kind of is because you're eating these nice whole unprocessed foods, although a lot of carbohydrates because of the grain load. What they did with the other two diets to compare it to is they replaced 10% of those carbohydrates with either 10% of protein or 10% of like polyunsaturated fats or any unsaturated fats. So
it's like what? Like avocados or
things like that, or maybe olive oil, something like that.
Right.
And the other with higher protein. But wait a minute, it's still over 50%
carbohydrates.
So which three popular diets did you use? You used one diet because you only replaced 10% of the carbs.
So another headline.
There's virtually no difference in the diets.
So another headline is all three diets equally mediocre at reducing cardiovascular risk.
But they're not three diets. They're the same diet with a 10% variability of carbohydrate in either protein or unsaturated fats. Really, it's the same diet.
Now, why did they do it?
Because the methodology is flawed.
You know why they did this? They chickened out because they did not want to perish the thought, have a diet that was high in saturated fats, like a keto diet.
Or a truly low-carb diet. Exactly.
A true low-carb diet, like an Atkins-type diet that's high in saturated fats.
Yes.
And polyunsaturated fats, because you know, we don't have anything against nuts, and we don't have anything against
olive oil and avocados.
We just want refined seed oils.
Exactly.
Lots of, but they did not test that diet.
No.
I guess it leads to the wrong impression, which is, doesn't matter what diet you follow.
Yeah.
You know.
Eat healthy food.
Yeah.
There was no comparison of three diets when you look at the methodology.
Right. Which is the sort of moderation view of nutrition that's popular among...
Exactly. So they're steering you away from the popular diets by claiming that they compared them.
Yeah.
There was no such comparison when you read the methodology.
Right.
So the whole thing is wrong and invalid.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Don't bother reading this,
Harvard University. Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
That's a shame. That's, you know, shame on the scientists that know better, I have to say. Really. To not really check this out to make sure that you were following those particular diets.
Yeah, I mean, just the devil's in the details. A protein-rich diet with 10% of calories from carbohydrates. Oh my God, 10% of calories from carbohydrates? No.
No.
10% of calories from carbohydrates replaced by protein.
Yeah, that's all they did.
They just somewhat reduced the carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And then an unsaturated fat-rich diet, because Parrish thought you can't have a saturated fat-rich diet, because we know that kills you.
Oh my
gosh. And cholesterol, would be there.
Cholesterol, absolutely.
So, and an unsaturated fat diet with 10% of calories from carbohydrates, no, it's not 10% of calories from carbohydrates. It's 10% of calories from carbohydrates exchanged with the healthy fats found in avocados, fish, and nuts.
So all three diets had 50-plus percentage of carbohydrates from, you know. So it varied between maybe 48 and, you know, 58%.
So
all
you,
three diets,
as a professional nutritionist, you spotted this right away. Woe betide the public, you know, reading articles like this. Could they do the bit of a deep dive to parse out the details of the study to see the spurious assumptions underlying it? I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too. I doubt it too. Because nobody's going to go ahead and read the article with understanding, number one. Number two, nobody has the attention span anymore. Do you notice at the beginning of many articles, this will take you so many minutes to read?
Right.
Like, that now has become important information. To say, how much time am I going to spend reading this?
I'm sorry.
I don't want to spend 20 minutes. Yeah, I want to spend 3.5.
I'm
because
sorry.
Because then I want to be distracted and do something else.
I'm sorry. I only have 4 minutes to read this article because I'm going to binge watch the entire season of Breaking Bad for 6 hours today. Or alternatively,
did you finish watching Breaking Bad, by the way?
Done, finally.
Done. Okay, good. Wasn't that great?
It was great. And, you know, or... I only have 4 minutes of attention span for this article so that I can just, you know, geek out on my Facebook following my high school friends, they're doing, you know, that I haven't seen in 45 years.
Right.
You know, okay.
So, yeah.
Modern consciousness.
Modern consciousness, exactly. Oh, my gosh. So, Dr. Hoppen, you got a very nice email from Gary. About your article, Stem Cells, Panacea, or Snake Oil, from August, just a few weeks ago. I express my appreciation for your discerning perspective on the forthcoming, on this forthcoming medical modality. Hope you are well and in good spirits. Gary.
That article got republished, got picked up by the Naturopathic Journal.
Oh,
the
great.
The Journal of Naturopathic something.
Naturopathic Medicine.
Yeah.
I love that journal.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. So, thank you, Gary, for that note. Let's see here.
Bottom line, stem cells not yet ready for prime time, although for certain applications, maybe for knees, under certain situations, they might help, although the research on that is still not...
Yeah.
It's hard to do the research because a lot of people have a pretty good placebo response to anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the differentiation part of... stem cells is still problematic.
Right. What they're working on is, I mean, what you need to do is take stem cells and then tweak them and cultivate them and modify them and then also inject them exactly where they need to go, you know, say in Parkinson's disease into the substantia nigra, which is a very targeted neurosurgery, you know, with the stem cells. But they can't just be stem cells that you pull out of your, you know, tummy fat, you know, or something like that. They have to be very somehow prepared in a way to take root and do reparative work.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. We have an email from Karen. Hi, Dr. Hoppen and Layla. I have a question about tachycardia. My friend has this. She's 60-
Translation, rapid heart rate.
Yeah. She's 63 years young. Very fit, slender, eats a whole food, home-cooked diet, no vegetable oils, one glass of wine per week, exercises daily, but she has a stressful home situation. She occasionally gets bouts of tachycardia. She's on no medication, has normal blood pressure, cholesterol. What can she do to get rid of it?
Hmm. Well, you know, tachycardia is... you know, has to be evaluated by a cardiologist. Is just rapid heart rate, or there skips, or there dangerous arrhythmias embedded in the rapid heart rate needs to be studied. You know, from a standard medical standpoint, beta blockers are used to slow down the heart rate.
Yeah, great for stage fright.
Well, great for stage, but you know, I have had, believe it or not, I've had a lot of stage fright in my early, you know, before I did a lot of presentations, and I never found the beta blockers beneficial because it's actually better to go into it with fear and harness the fear and conquer the fear and
use it prepares that. You too. It helps you to challenge up.
Yeah.
There's such thing as good anxiety.
Yeah. So, you know, to be oblivious is not good either. It's like a comedian who's bombing on stage, but they don't care.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, So, you know, I think the key a little bit is the stressful home life, although there can be organic causes to tachycardia, and aging hearts do have changes in their rhythm. Mm-hmm. And people have sometimes get stuck in sort of sympathetic overdrive. And that's both a psychological and a physiological state.
Right.
A good natural beta blocker, of course, is magnesium. And we might recommend magnesium taurate in particular, because magnesium and taurate both seem to slow the action potential of nerves in the heart and prevent these hair trigger reactions. So we go high sometimes on that, 2, 4, 6, 8 capsules a day. You can usually not run into trouble unless you have renal failure with magnesium.
Yeah.
And the first sign that you have too much magnesium is
you'll have diarrhea.
Diarrhea.
Because it's a natural source of
it. So that I would do.
Yeah.
There's also some evidence that Crataegus hawthorn has a bit of a regulatory effect on heart rate. Fish oil definitely can attenuate rapid heart rate. It seems to lower sympathetic tone a little bit. But you know,
I would add CoQ10. I would add meditation. I would add some kind of reaction change to the stress somehow, however possible.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Cognitive, left nostril breathing. This is a yoga thing to calm down the sympathetic nervous system.
Breathing really controls that.
It does.
If you can get your breathing down, you can actually get a bit of a handle on your sympathetic nervous system and rein it in.
So things like that, those supplements, meditation, a change of view on the stressful situation and embrace it differently, if embraceable. I don't know.
Divorce.
So, divorce, change of living arrangement, removal of toxic environment, remove yourself from the toxic environment, or...
Easier said than done.
It's true.
Because sometimes...
It's true.
Just merely physically removing you does not remove you from the life experience that has engendered these reactions. You know,
so
stress is an internal, not an external factor.
It's how it's viewed, how it's dealt with. It's
blood sugar.
Blood sugar. Oh yeah.
Talk about a little bit. Hypoglycemia.
Hypoglycemia can bring on tachycardia. Can bring on palpitations, rapid heartbeat.
And the concern is that sometimes people on a quote healthy diet, they may be having too much in the way of carbohydrates and eschewing healthy fat and protein, which can sort of anchor the blood sugar.
Exactly. Help to stabilize it. So it's important to have some protein, some fat at every meal to help stabilize blood sugar.
And maybe study blood sugar, see if tachycardia occurs when there's low blood sugar episodes during the day.
Yeah. You know, to check what time of day this is happening.
Is there a pattern?
Is there a pattern? Exactly.
Measure cortisol. We might look at cortisol as a proxy for stress. Some people will show really high spikes in cortisol. We saw a woman the other day, a woman who's experienced tremendous anxiety and depression. Her cortisol was at the top.
It was almost off the graph.
She's just churning out cortisol, stress hormones. It's almost like when you get in a state like that, it's sort of a self-perpetuating state where you just churn out these stress hormones. Adrenaline and cortisol.
And you want to be careful, because a chronic state of high cortisol will thin your bones, thin your skin, age you, pack on fat, do all of that.
So anti-anxiety things, CBD.
CBD,
L-theanine for women, progesterone.
Yeah.
Because progesterone can really help
for
some women. Tachycardia is a manifestation of menopause. At 63, maybe, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Although sometimes you can, you know, have some latency from menopause that occurred when you're 50.
Yeah. Yeah, so that could be something as well. Karen, we hope this helps you and your friend. Thank you very much for sending us your email. Okay. We have an email. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a 45-year-old male in good health. You guys do so much good by answering questions and helping people. I just got a routine blood test, and I was wondering, would you be alarmed that my basophils, eosinophils, and hemoglobin, eosinophils, yep. Thank you,
yep.
And hemoglobin were low. So those three, eosinophils, basophils.
Does this person give us any kind? She's 45, did you say?
He's 45. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, in good health.
Generally, we're more concerned about high levels of eosinophils. Maybe
it's allergic, right?
Yeah, suggest an allergic state or sometimes a clue to whether you were suffering from parasite. Parasites.
That's interesting.
And you know, with just the isolated hemoglobin low, I don't know that is a problem. I mean, you'd have to get your iron checked to see
Right. I think the first rule is any blood test that's showing abnormal numbers, normally the practitioner would want to do it over to see if there wasn't a lab error or something.
And the way that eosinophils and basophils are counted, they're counted in a automated way and not by visual inspection and by hand. Mm-hmm. So there could be a mistake.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put too much point. See, people generally, you get a blood test, something's going to be abnormal.
Yeah.
And then people sort of hang on that abnormality. Mm-hmm. When a doctor might scan it quickly and say, this is no big whoop. This pattern does not concern me. Mm-hmm. And I do that all the time. You know, I don't read blood tests literally like, oh my goodness, let's see, there's low basophils. Let's go through all the category of disease entities that are associated with low basophils.
Right.
Well, there are probably, you know, a myriad conditions, but nothing
wouldn't be any of the above because it's nothing to really be alarmed about.
In the context of the patient rather than looking at the isolated blood test.
Yeah.
That's why I think that, you know, AI and machine learning has a great potential for helping to discern patterns with blood tests, but it's nothing.
Artificial intelligence?
Yeah.
AI?
Mm-hmm. Right. There's nothing that will replace the physician's judgment.
Yeah.
Especially an experienced diagnostician, to pull it all together and come up with a Gestalt, which is a German word meaning like the overall impression of what's going on. Now, Gestalts can be misleading. You can have...
I haven't heard that word since the 90s, 80s.
Well, it's like a form of psychotherapy, Gestalt.
Yeah, Gestalt, yeah.
But, you know, it's an important word because it means like the overall impression of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is generic. People say this or that or the other thing is wrong. I'd have to know more about the context of these changes. I mean, a low hemoglobin,
could be
a sign of anemia.
Yeah.
Most common cause is low iron. But as people age, sometimes their blood counts go down. It's not a big concern. Mm-hmm. 45 is a little early to be seeing those changes if the person isn't truly anemic.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
You know. I'm speculating here now, so I don't want to go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
I would say, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Get retested.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, so at this let's pause because we want to divide our podcast into two parts.
Okay.
Give us a preview of what we're going to handle in part two, Layla.
Oh, Mark is asking, I'm wondering if my TSH levels could be contributing to my being overweight and having difficulty losing weight.
Thyroid stimulating hormone.
Mm.
Okay, we're going to go through some of the relationships between thyroid blood tests and the risk of obesity when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. I'm delighted that our mailbag is full in spite of a little bit coming off the August doldrums. But here we are in a new seasonal cycle, and the pace is quickening, and the questions are coming in. That's a good thing. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.